Hi, this is Jorn. I give you the right to rock.
The right to rock.
Listening to the Right to Rock podcast, the only heavy metal and hard rock show on the net made by fans for fans. And now, get ready for two guys that are so metal, they pour motor oil on their cereal. It's Genghis and Rackman!
This is Genghis, and this is Rackman, and we have a special night for you, an evening with a featured artist. So we want to give you the most of what Genghis and I can do with an artist. We want to give you everything we can do with an artist. So, that's a killer masterpiece theater music.
That's very good.
I feel like I'm classical or something like this. I don't know how I did.
It makes me want to speak in a very elevated tone. I want to say a shout out to all of our viewers and listeners.
I feel English. English and
starting
Russian at the same time. I don't know.
Starting to feel very British. As I sip upon my ale.
We should toast to our guest and bid you adieu because we have a great interview.
That's right.
That's almost poetic.
I thank you all for joining us. Please
thanks
to our interview and enjoy.
And we will talk to you next time.
Cheers.
See ya.
Horns up.
Horns up.
Hi, this is Jorn, and you're listening to the Genghis and Rackman show. Horns up.
Can you feel me in the dark? Lost and lonely, walking blind. Hear me calling, are you falling from your dreaming sky? I see sorrow screaming in your eyes.
Yeah!
right, guys, you're on live with Ragman, mano y mano. And this is just a special moment for Ragman because he's only talked to this man once. Probably his favorite vocalist in the world now that Ronnie James Dio is no longer with us, Mr. Jorn Land. Give it up, people. Jorn, how you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for you know, having me on the show and everything. I mean, it's wonderful, yeah.
To me, it's an honor, man. I've been a fan for a very, very long time, from ARC, Millennium, believe it or not. Got that on vinyl.
I don't even have that one on vinyl. I wish I had that one on vinyl. I mean, I can't keep up. It's been so many. It sounds cheesy, but it is true. I mean, it's been too many records, and I don't even know how many now. Probably between 40 and 50 albums with various projects and bands have been in, and, then you have like 10, 15 your own albums as well, so but it's been a roller coaster ride and mostly a positive experience, I guess.
Well, it's interesting, man. You've been doing this for around 23 years or so, and you have 40 plus records. I mean, you got a catalog that some bands have been around 30, 40 years don't even have that many records out, man.
Well, I mean, releasing albums internationally, that's been going on for maybe around 25 years. But yeah, I started with music at an early age. I was only 9 when I had my first band. The rest of the guys were like 14 to 16, 17 years old, and that was as early as 1977. So I still have newspaper clips, from that. And then we even played shows back then. Of course, only locally, but it's been a long time. And it's been a long process to, first time I started writing, songs that was with my band. I was probably in like 84, 85, when the songs actually started sounding good, or at least close to something good. So but you're right, I mean the first proper album that came out was beginning of the 90s or late 80s. So yeah, I was it's been a long journey, but a good journey, I guess.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. I mean, it just seems like, and your name's out there. I mean, you've done so many great things. I'm sure, and we hadn't got to, I don't think we talked about this, but after Ronnie Dio passed, you got to sing with Sabbath. I think it was you and Glenn Hughes I had heard. Mm-hmm. I wish they would have released that on a DVD. That would have been amazing to see. But that had to be just, I don't know if the pinnacle of your career, but pretty damn close.
I don't know. I mean, on a personal level, it was, very, a very, very powerful experience and a very important experience. It was really something special, but it was also a very sad thing, I think. You couldn't really enjoy it at the time, You were honored that you had that kind of, request, that you were asked to do this. But it was really a sad occasion, and it was I really couldn't really enjoy it in that sense, because I just wanted to do my part, and we raised some money for the cancer fund.
Mm-hmm.
It's more for the band to play that show, and also to pay respect to Ronnie, and it was almost like a memorial thing going on, and to put the band, the Heaven and Hell concept to rest, because that show was originally meant to be played with Ronnie. So that show in Victoria Park in 2010. So no, I'm, you know, I'm grateful for doing that, and it gave me a lot of how should I put it, like a lot of confirmations about things. You know, I got to I mean, I already knew Tony from the past because we did some demos together back in 2005. So I, you know, I stayed in touch with him already since then, before. So and also Ronnie wanted to do the tour actually back then. He wanted to play all the shows even though he was sick. So I was asked to do some of these shows with the, you know, as if he was too weak to do it, I could, you know, go on stage and do some of the songs. And that was actually something that we talked about in the early spring of 2010. But then, you know, we all know what happened, and it didn't happen, and you know, it was tragedy, you know. So but you know, we did that show, and I'm really grateful for that. Even though I know I would love to play more shows with the band, you know, but you know, it's kind of understandable, you know. We belong to two different eras in a way, and even though I grew up in the 70s, it's still, you know, many years. I mean, Tony could be my father, Geezer could be my father, you know.
Wow, that's an awesome story, Jorn. And I do see how that was would have been kind of depressing, because I think any heavy metal fan out there was really depressed. I was just thrilled to hear that, because I know what a Dio fan you are, to hear that you were involved, and of course Glenn Hughes, and you know, Iommi have that relationship. So I would think, I just want to see it. I thought, man, what a great tribute, and what a great show that would have been to see.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was, I don't think it was recorded or anything. It might have been, but to be honest, I don't think so. I think, you know, what exists on the internet, I think that's it. So like I said, it was I mean, Ronnie was, you know, to me it was the best, you know. And I mean, there are many great singers and many great artists out there, and sometimes it's kind of limited to say, oh, there's only one, you know. But even though I enjoyed a lot of singers, it's just, you know, the total package that Ronnie had. He just had everything, and at the same time, he was such a lovely person, and that's what I, you know, kind of embraced. And it just maybe made me a bigger fan than before when I, you know, met him in person, back in 2000, when I was touring the U.S. with Yngwie Malmsteen. And there was this double billing. So it was after that. You know, I was a fan before, but after that, I just, you know, realized that, my God, that's something to look up to, you know, to be so down to earth. And at the time, I was, you know, a bit insecure about my own career and what to do, and I had a lot of questions, and there's a lot of insecurity, you know, regarding, you know, what to do, and, you know, all these things that he told me when we had had a talk, and, you know, over an Irish coffee at the hotel, was this was this one night where I asked him a lot of questions, and you know, that kind of changed a lot for me. It's kind of a lot of confirmations. It really helped me decide my own path in a way. And it just showed that he was just, you know, a normal guy. He was just, you know, it helped me just stay true to my myself, you know, true to the heart somehow. So, yeah, he was a great guy, a great inspiration, and he was definitely very honest in what he did. And that's the most essential thing with Ronnie, I think. His good heart and his love for what he did.
Oh, yeah. And he was great to the fans, too, that's for sure. Well, let's talk about your new record, Jorn, Heavy Rock Radio. Let me ask you, because The Traveler came out in 2013, so that was your last, well, it wasn't really your last studio record because you did the phenomenal Dracula last year.
But, well, thanks.
You know, going back to doing a Jorn solo record, what made you do a covers record opposed to another studio record?
Well, I just, you know, kept busy all the time, either co-writing with others or, you know, working on my own songs. And I always wanted to do some of these songs, but I never could find the time. And everybody I worked with also kind of, you know, come up with some riffs or send me some demos. So, you know, we would start going off on some new thing all the time. So every time I mentioned the cover song or I mentioned some of these songs, oh, it would be great to do that one or that one. We could include that on the next record. Or, you know, we always ended up with mostly original material. And I never had time to do it, really. And I committed to do too many things, I guess. You know, it's like you sign the contract or you say yes. when you answer an email, it's like, okay, I'll do it. I'll find time. I'll squeeze it in. So my calendar was just full all the time, and eventually I just decided that I have to try and do some of these songs, and I wrote down a list of, you know, 40, 50 songs and picked out 12, 15 for Heavy Rock Radio, basically. And then there's still, you know, 30 songs to go, you know. I'm thinking that, you know, I should do the other songs as well, the songs that didn't make it on this album. So, because all the songs were great, it was really difficult to choose. I had like 3-4 Kate Bush songs. I had a couple of ABBA songs, you know, in addition to the Frida and the, you know, Russ Ballard song. And same with Queen. I had like 3-4 Queen songs I loved, you know. Actually, Bohemian Rhapsody was on the list as well, you know. So,
oh, nice.
Because I have this idea to do that song in a, you know, different, slightly different arrangement than the original, and you know, it could be interesting. You know, I just, you know, try to make a list of the songs that I loved, and I had to choose, you know, 12, 15 of those, and that was hard because there were too many good songs, basically. So, but, you know, I love the flow of the album in the end. Now, you know, you have some songs that were spot on that, you know, I think I nailed, you know. And I felt when they were done, I felt like they were almost my own songs in a way, you know. So I'm definitely managed to put my own stamp on these songs. And but there are a few songs that I realized afterwards that, you know, despite the songs sounding good and the performance being good, I realized that my vision was, you know, the vision I had for the songs, it didn't came through, you know, come through exactly as I had hoped for, you know. And but still pretty good, you know. But that's how picky I am, you know. I always go for the 100%. But, you know, if I can, if a song is 70% of what I had in mind, you know, then I'm usually happy. So the overall result is really good, I think. Some songs, like I said, stick out, like Running Up That Hill.
Agreed.
Sounds almost like my own song in a way, just because, you know, I think it was accidental, because I love Kate Bush, I love the song. I was inspired in the past when I wrote my own song, Black Song, for the Duke album. And then Running Up That Hill was used as a reference, because we actually talked about doing Running Up That Hill, but then we ended up writing our own song, you know, inspired by Running Up That Hill. So you can hear that. If you listen to Black Song, you will easily hear where I have everything from in that song. It's very obvious. It's easy to hear. So, you know, so I just thought, you know, now it's time to do that song, you know. And also with the title Heavy Rock Radio, I thought that you know, choosing some of the more artistic obscure songs on the list, you know, would not necessarily fit the concept. So I tried to stick to some of those songs that were, you know, the most accessible and well-known songs as well. Running Up That Hill, you know, I Know There's Something Going On. These songs were already charting back in the 80s, and you know, to make a nice blend, I also thought, you know, to make it less obvious that I tried to make this radio album in a way, even though the title kind of gives it all away. I still wanted to, you know, show that it's not just about, you know, selling out or anything. I just, you know, I want to do some good rock classics as well, in addition to some of these more radio-friendly songs in a way. So that's why I chose Rev on the Red Line, which is probably, at least in a global sense, one of the lesser-known foreigner songs. I mean, if you compare it to I Want to Know What Love Is and Say You Will and, you know, all these songs, or Cold as Ice or whatever's been, you know, always playing on the radio in the States and stuff. Yeah. So I think that song is, you know, it kind of sums up Foreigner. It sums up the band in a way. It's from the era when they were really, you know, a rock band. Yeah. No, I just want to say that, you know, like the verses, for example, of Rev on the Red Line, they're actually, you know, pretty similar to the verses of Say You Will, actually, if you listen to it. It's different, but still you can recognize that typical Foreigner structure. So you can easily hear that, you know, the development, how they would develop into what they became in the 80s in a way. So I just, you know, just thought, and also, you know, the cars, you know, I love American cars. Yeah, and I mean, I've owned several American cars. I've had like a 1970 Mach 1 Mustang. I've had 351 four-barrel Cleveland engine. I've had the 68 Corvette Stingray with a big block engine. So it's kind of, you know, and, you know, and I've been playing these Foreigner songs loud, and especially Rev on the Red Line. So it's it was just a song, you know, it's a song for the guys, you know. Songs that the boys love. And I just thought that that song with a more hi-fi production and, you know, a bit more heavy guitars and stuff, it would be really cool. And I'm sure, you know, people that love fast cars and stuff, I would love that song, you know, to hear that song in a, you know, fresh and more modern arrangement or sound, you know, with a modern sound. So I don't know, I just tried to follow my heart, really, and, you know, pick the songs that were natural to me and that would make a good flow, you know, for the album, basically. And but then again, like I said, I'm left with so many songs that I still want to do. So we'll see. I mean, there's some unfinished business with that list, so I have to probably have to record another one, you know, another album like that. But in the meantime, I'm going to write some new songs, because, you know, that's also important to me, not to dwell on doing covers. And I noticed that some on some of the interviews I've done, I'm asked, or people tend to tell me that I've done a lot of covers in my time. But you know, personally, when I look at my career and my history, it's kind of, you know, of all the 40 and between 40 and 50 albums I've done, I've only done two covers albums before, and now this is the third. And out of all the, I did some stuff with the old guys from Whitesnake, Mickey Moody and Bernie Marsden, but that was basically a live record. So, you know, I'm not counting that, but that was all some old Whitesnake songs. But, you know, most of the covers I've done, they've been actually bonus tracks, or you know, there would be one or two records with one cover song on it amongst like 10 other originals. So I didn't really do too many cover songs, and that's actually what I would like to do more of that. So and I've decided to find time to do it, and it's kind of started. Well, it's you know, I don't count the album with Dio songs either, because that was, you know, it was a certain personal thing, you know, with wanting to pay tribute to Ronnie and stuff. So but you know, this new record, I think, is more outstanding than a lot of the songs I recorded in the past. I think this record has some really strong songs on it, and it's less obvious, because people would expect me to sing stuff from Rainbow or Dio or Sabbath or Whitesnake, or so. Even though you have a Sabbath song on Heavy Rock Radio, and you have a Dio song as well, the majority of songs are you know, from a different genre, in a way that you would not expect from me, I guess. And then, you know, so in that sense, it's I feel the album is a bit more original, and in the, you know, it's original choices of songs, you know, most of them. So
I agree. It was funny, some of these, when I first put on the CD, I didn't recognize them. Running Up a Hill sounded kind of familiar, because my wife's a huge Kate Bush fan. And I was like, I kind of know that, but where do I know that from? But you know, yeah, the one that really blew me away, and I thought it was yours, was John Farnham's You're the Voice.
Oh, You're the Voice, yeah.
Dude, that is an awesome, just so catchy a song, man.
Big in the US. It was huge in Norway and Germany and some more European countries, you know, and also when John Farnham was a singer in Little River Band, the Australian band. They tried they made an effort to to get successful in the U.S., but it didn't happen. They played on several like talk shows or TV shows, and they presented some great songs. But they somehow, it was the right time for the music they did, but it just didn't happen for them. So, and then John Farnham broke out, in a way, and started his own thing, and he recorded Your The Voice, and it sold 2 million copies or so instantly, that record.
Oh wow.
And today he is the most selling Australian artist, he's really, I think he just decided that he wanted to focus on Australia and his own country, and he just realized that this is where I'm from and this is where I live. And I saw him live at a smaller club in Oslo in 91, 92. It was really great. But, the strange thing was that I had this VHS cassette with a concert from Sydney, from the Sydney Opera House. It was huge, symphony orchestra, is like this bagpipe player from Scotland, in his outfit, Scottish outfit, and it's like a big choir, it's like thousands of tickets sold, and the show is really great. It still exists on DVD, and probably some of it is on YouTube and stuff as well, but it was so good and it was so massive that when I saw him at this small club with a normal 5-piece band, and I was just thinking, we are just a few hundred people here watching this legend, this guy who's probably one of the greatest live performers ever. He's so good, that guy. That if you don't know him, you should really look at some of the stuff. There's this guy from the Sydney Opera House from 1989. It's so good that you'll be totally blown away. Even though the style is not hard rock or heavy metal or anything, it's just that the performance is so unique. And and that song was I just loved him as a singer, and I've been a fan for years, since I was since I first heard him sing in the beginning of the 80s. I always, went back to check his albums, and I was fascinated by his performance, and he still sings well. I mean, he's retired now, or at least he's in that age. But, he's still John Farnham, and he still sings great. It's just some things you cannot deny, that there are certain qualities that certain people have that, regardless of the times moving on, and regardless of what's new or modern, there's just something that's just, you cannot touch it. It's just, he has a gift that just, even if I'm at my best, I would probably feel very small next to this guy, even though I know I could do it. I can do a lot of great, vocal kind of, how should I put it? I could do like a lot of great interpretations of songs. I could write my own stuff, and I could, I have a big range. I could do a lot of things. But sometimes you just realize that some people do only what they're best at doing, and that's why they are so unique, while the rest of the world tends to spread their branches in every direction, always considering what's politically correct, you know, wanting to do, you know, it's like the wine is watered out.
Mm-hmm.
You use your talent, but you know, with your experience, you can sometimes do things that's not, you know, too close to your heart, but because you have the talent, you can still do it in a way. So you do it, and people say, "Oh, they clap your hands. Oh, great, you can do that too. Oh, you're diverse. You're a diverse singer. You can sing everything. Oh, great, great, fantastic." But you know, and you know, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that some things really separate the best ones, you know, from the good ones, in a way, and that's. You know, you can still be good, but there are certain qualities, and I don't know, just less compromises with some of these genuine artists that I consider to be the best on the planet. You know, and again, you know, you go back to the Elvis Presley. Kind of a comparison, you know, because he was so unique, and he had everything, and that kind of thing, that soul and that heart and that presence, to be able to take himself, you know, I mean, he didn't take himself, you know, serious, I think, all the time. It was just, you know, playing with the audience, having a good time, being spontaneous with so many things, but it was all magic, and that kind of thing, as not many people have that in the music business. You know, John Farnham is one of these guys, one of these few guys. It's like Freddie Mercury, or you know, like we talked about Ron James Dio as well. You know,
oh yeah,
he had those key kind of things that you know, I think you must be born with those things, and you either have it or you don't, you know, and even if you have it, you might not end up in the position you could have been, you know, so because you were spreading your branches too much, and you know, you were compromising too much with, you know, whatever, your record company or your fans, or you were accepting to sing or play certain things that you know you could do, but they're not, you know, too natural for you, but you still pull it off because, you know, make it your style in a way, you adapt to the situation, and of course, you know, you're not gonna get to specialize on one thing when you do like that. You're still gonna be good. You know, you're gonna, you know, cash in on what you do, and you're gonna do that, but it kind of prevents you from creating that legacy that's carved in stone. You know.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, this record is really cool, and I really like the track listing. I think you did a really good job. I don't like your cookie cutter. Okay, I'm just gonna, like you said, I'm just gonna cover Judas Priest or Iron Maiden or, you know, all these metal bands. I love that you pulled out some of these classics that aren't as well known. And I want to take my hat off to you. The Queen, Killer Queen, sounds amazing.
She keeps mulling a shondo in a pretty cabinet, wrapped on eat cake. She says just like Mary Antoinette. Built in remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy.
Question for you though, out of all the songs that you did on this, I want to know from you which one was the most challenging. And I'm going to throw this out here. I think this one might at least be one up in the top too. But Don't Stop Believing, was that a pretty tough song to sing, or was there something more, something else on the record that was more challenging?
More challenging, actually, because that song, I thought that song would be easy, because when I did the Dracula Swing of Death album and the title track Swing of Death, it had a certain approach, and I did that very, you know, naturally and I was thinking to do Killer Queen with the same approach. It's a bit like Freddie did it, but at the same time, it's slightly different. So,
yeah,
it's also a bit, it's less feminine, and I wanted to leave out all the, you know, the feminine high choirs and stuff. So, I want to make it more like a, like, you know, sound like a man in a way, you know, less operatic, more spoken, you know, and of course, you know, British somehow, but, you know, so it's theatrical, but at the same time, there's some more testosterone to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Somehow, and you know, I think when I started singing that song, I thought it would be pretty easy. You know, I would compare it to Swing of Death, and I would think I'll do the same thing, like Swing of Death, because, you know, then you get your own kind of stamp on it, you know, which is, you know, the intention. And but it was really difficult to sing that song, because, you know, to find that right feel and you know, expression was a big challenge. And I was either too theatrical, or I was too soft, or, you know, too heavy, or so that was really tricky. So sometimes you realize that the original is, you know, you know, it's untouchable somehow, you know, and you're still, you know, proud of your version in the end, and you're happy that you nailed it somehow, but you realize that the original is the original. And that's what I thought when I did Killer Queen, to be honest. Even though, you know, people I know, you know, my wife and, you know, my family, and people say, oh my God, it sounds so good, but and I say, well, thank you, I appreciate it, but, you know, at the same time, I cannot help thinking, you know, that, you know, this was actually a big struggle when I tried to do to make it right, and so it makes me, it will always makes me think that that song is, you know, it's a good version. It's not the strongest on the album, you know what I mean? So it's good, but not the strongest on the album, and maybe other people, you know, from an objective point of view will think it different, but you know, that's my opinion, you know, because I'm just, you know, picky with what I do myself, and probably more picky than most people, you know, so that didn't, you know, contribute to the recording. So I mean, that song, Don't Stop Believing, that wasn't too difficult, actually. That song was, if you try to sing that song with a thin, clean voice, and you really try to copy Steve Perry's expression too much when you sing, then it's difficult. You know, because then you have something to compare to, and then that's something you try to achieve a certain expression, but then it becomes, you know, fake in a way and a bit false. So I think what I did with that song was basically just to sing it with a more natural, raspy voice, you know, more rough voice, because, you know, my voice sounds like that. When instead of trying to close my vocal cords to sound thinner because this is a sweet melody and so I just stick to the grit and just not trying to pretend it too much, you know. So when you make it an honest performance, it's actually not that hard to sing a song. People think it's very high, but it's not really that high, you know. You know, when you open up your vocal cords and you sing it like, you know, like a tenor in a more operatic way, it's easier for me to hit the notes and stuff. So, you know, the power is there in a way. But you know, I still feel the same, actually, when you're talking about the songs you mentioned. I still feel the same with that song. The original has that kind of freshness or that kind of passion or youth or whatever you want to call it. It's just some energy to the original that, you know, you can't really match it, but you can make your own version and you can do your own style. But you know, and I'm happy with the song, and you know, if you look at the sound of everything, the production and how we changed the arrangements, it kind of, you know, became something new, something slightly different. So it's a cool alternative version.
Oh, I agree, man. And you made it your own. You really did. And that's what you did all these songs. And that's what's so cool. It's not Jorn singing karaoke. It's Jorn making these songs heavy and rocking.
I don't wish to, you know, my intention with when recording these songs, of course, my intention was to make it as good as possible. But I'm also very, you know, I love these songs and I love the original artists to begin with. And regardless of how good a song comes out in the end, I'm still a big fan of the original artist, and to me the original is always the best, you know. And I'm proud when I listen to my version, and sometimes I will you know, listen over and over again to maybe a couple of the songs which I thought, you know, came out brilliant. But and you know, once in a while you cross that point where you actually start to think that, wow, this is actually as good as the original, or even the ones, very rarely, you know, it's even better. But you don't that doesn't happen too often. So, but at least, you know, you could match a certain quality level and say that, okay, this is on the top level, and this is matching the quality of the original, and it's an alternative version, and that's cool. But you know, most of the time when you do cover songs, you just cannot match the original, and I think I'm very honest with that. You know, I know when I made it personal and when it really worked, and I felt strong about it after the performance and the recording and the production and whatever, you know, everything. So, but then I also realized that some songs were just, you know, not for me, you know, but still, because I have an experience and, you know, and a good range, and, you know, I still made the best effort possible to, because I already started recording it and it was all there, great drums, great guitars, and, you know, of course I had to make it work somehow in the end. So no, I think, you know, I'm not the guy who's got resting on one album or saying that, oh, that's my masterpiece. I'm just living now and just, you know, next year there's something else, and trying to channel things and make my best effort possible based on where I am now, and, you know, the person I am now. And I think sometimes it works great, other times it's not as great as last year, you know. So it's, but this time it was really good, I think, overall. I'm really proud of some of these songs, and you know, it took some time to do those songs. People think, oh, it's just covers, but you realize how great the original versions are. So it's a big challenge to make those songs sound great, and if you can just go in and sing something and record something, or like the whole arrangements, everything, if that happens spontaneously and quickly, then you're lucky in a way. Then you just, that's when you hit the nail on the head, you know. Mm-hmm. And we did that with a few songs.
Oh yeah, I agree. I really am digging this record, and I know we're getting short on time here, but I'll tell you, when I go out, and we were talking about wine and beer here a little bit ago, on the weekends I have my iPod set up, and a lot of it is mixed with just, so it's, you know, the fan, everybody can get into it, like, you know, some classic rock as well as some, you know, 80s, 90s, you know, new millennium, you know, heavy metal type stuff. But I thought, I said, you know what? With Jorn's new record, I can just put a whole, the whole damn thing and get it on the shelf on the iPod, and everything, you know, everybody will dig this. It's a, just such a good, solid record. It flows so well, and congratulations. It's really, I really dig it, man.
Thanks, mate. Well, you know, I love the songs. You know, and I have to say that, you know, the songs are so well written from before, and so well crafted that if you make a like honest attempt to make it good, you get a lot for free in a way when you, you know, work on songs like this, you know, so because they're so good from the beginning. Of course, it's important that you add something to it, and that, you know, that you are honest with the performance, everything. It's not just about singing the song. You have to add something personal, and it has to be a part of you somehow. But you gain or get a lot from the actual compositions, because they are so good. So, I mean, you know, talking about, for example, Hotel California, it's such a good song that, you know, people would probably, I mean, it's almost like messing with religion.
You know? I gotcha, man.
So, I mean, people would say, you're not doing that one, Jorn, you're not doing that one. And, yeah, well, I was thinking about it. I said, well, maybe do, you know, I was thinking, you know, I have an idea for some, you know, some guitar arrangement stuff. Could be cool with this kind of heavy riff going, without changing the melody or the dynamics too much. Maybe singing it a bit more, you know, a bit rougher, and, you know, bring it some more power to it, but not too much. Stay true to that original thing, because, you know, or else it's gonna get, you know, it's stupid. You have to be. You have to really feel it, you know. There has to be the same kind of build up in the song, and same feel, and in a way. But how do we do that? And I think, you know, again, the same thing. It's a cool alternative version. If you look at the more dynamic quiet build-up of the original. It's beautiful, and you know, Don Henley is, you know, is kind of, you know, unique, and it's just legendary. But then again, you know, if you think about the fact that we are living in a new time now, and I mean, how cool isn't it to just get those guitars pumping a bit more, and you know, some more drums there, and the vocals to be a bit more upfront, or a bit more on the edge, not as laid back as the old days, and a bit more in your face, basically everything. And of course, sometimes you lose some feeling, because the second you sing harder, or you try to be, you know, more powerful with what you do, you lose some of that dynamic feeling that the original has, you know, or originals, any song really. Yes. Because, you know, there's less air, there's less space, because you fill up that with, you know, bigger sounding guitars, big drums. So even though you don't have too many intricate things going on, too many complex arrangements, still the sound is so massive and big that you lose some of that dynamic anyway. So, but you have to live with that. That's the modern times we're living in. That's how it works. If you're gonna have a you know, distorted guitar and you know, crunchy sounding kind of, you know, approach to everything, then that's you're gonna lose some of that anyway. For those songs, you could always say that, you know, I mean, if I listen to Hotel California, of course, when listening to the old acoustic guitars, probably they were recorded with a microphone, you know what I mean? It would be like probably a thick acoustic guitar playing the intro, and it was probably recorded with the microphones separate from the guitar, or acoustic guitar, you know, then you would get the ambience from the sound, you know, you get that feel, and that's why the original sounds so good. But then when we recorded it, we actually recorded it with a plugged in acoustic 12 string.
Oh, nice.
So, well, it's nice, but at the same time, you lose some body to the sound. So you can always find something, you know, you can always be critical with things and say that, oh, the original has that warm, thick, big ambient sound, you know, in the beginning. The acoustic guitars of the original is so warm and, you know, round and, you know, warm, is that, you know, you can't really, you didn't match that feel. You can always get that experience, but then again, it's like, does it really make a difference in the big picture? You know, it's kind of it's still, you know, it's a great sound, and it's a cool alternative arrangement. It's very much different from the original anyway. So, you know, at some point, I think, you know, you could always analyze the past and swear to using various techniques and recipes. You know, you can always say that recording the drums on an analog tape machine, that's the best solution, and you know, recording the drums in a big room, and you spend like, you know, 2 days or three just to get the drum sound right. But then again, it still works, you know, to put some samples on the drums and record drums in the basement, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. It still works today because you have the possibilities in a technologically, you know, in a sense, you know, you can kind of, technology has moved on, you know, to a level where you, and so it's a matter of taste, really. And I think my generation and the people that are older would probably, you know, get picky with some of these details I just talked about. You know, if something is, the ambience is not right, or if the acoustic 12 string sounds better back then compared to now, how did they record it? But that's just, you know, it's a small detail that in the big picture, it doesn't really make a big difference to the overall outcome of the song or the album, because I don't think most people think about it. You know, they still hear it's the right arrangement, it's the right melody, it's the right way of playing it. That's what counts in a way. And of course, you know, there's always some feeling and heart that happened once, you know, and you lose some and you gain some. Production is a bit fresher, you know, song sounds a bit more fresh and new, and it's not an old West Coast tune anymore. It's a rock tune, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool again, that you can say, oh, what's Hotel California, what's that? Oh, it's a rock tune. Oh, I like it, you know. Even though it wasn't a rock tune from the beginning, but now it sounds like a rock tune. So that's, you know, you take it to a different musical level in a way, so without changing it too much, you know.
So yeah, it's cool. Sure. Well, Jorn, what do you have planned for the summer? Are you going to be able? I know you're doing some stuff with Avantasia. Are you going to do anything solo? Any sort of touring behind this, or is this kind of a filler until the new record or new studio record comes out?
I'm doing some festivals, some Avantasia festivals, and then I'm probably going to finish the next Jorn album. I'm thinking to take a break actually this year from playing Jorn shows. I'm thinking to, and I also have a couple of things going on that I might do, which is, you know, more different projects that I've been involved in the past as well. So I might do those, but first of all, I'll focus on the next original Jorn album, and then we'll see. I'm just thinking, you know, now it's time to focus a bit more on making a good record and We'll shoot a couple of videos. Probably we'll do a couple of more. I would say, I wouldn't say proper videos, but you know, I would say we would kind of spend more time on that with the band, not like I've done for this album, which where I've kind of, you know, done a lot of simple stuff. It's been filmed, and it's cool, you know, because the songs are so good that they deserve something, you know. So instead of having one video that took, you know, some time and effort and some budget to create, I just, you know, thought that this record has so many great songs that it's better to just do, you know, several videos where I do it simple. So I think it's cool. I mean, in the big picture, there will still be another few videos coming for Heavy Rock Radio. As I said, maybe, you know, the videos are not spectacular, but they are, you know, doing the job, and they are honestly made. It's you know, it's the artist presenting the song and, you know, performing the song and trying to understate the point of everything, you know, the message of the lyrics, everything, you know, through the video. So as long as that comes across as a real and honest performance, then, you know, then I'm fine and happy with that. It's better than, I think, you know, when you have so many great songs on one album, it's better to do it that way than to do one video, you know, that you spent a fortune on, and that's it, you know. So that's the situation with this album, really. I just decided that, you know, there are too many good songs on this record to just have one video that you spend a lot of money on, and you know, and of course that could, you know, result in a lot of views and, you know, a lot of attention for one song, but I mean, that's not why I'm in the business. I'm not in the business for the views, you know. I'm in the business for the people that really like the music, and the music is the most important thing, not the views. So, but then again, you know, everything can change. You know, maybe next year, as I said, you know, I'll do a couple of different ones with some of my original songs. We probably will not do like many videos, but we'll probably do a couple, and you know, we might do those in a more like a band setting, you know, where we will show this more like a proper band. You know, Heavy Rock Radio is more, it's a different, it's a Yawn record, but at the same time, it's kind of it's not a stable lineup the way things are right now. You know, we just got Francesco on drums, great drummer. He never played with me before, so it's kind of like, you know, introducing him in a way through this album. That's also why I thought, you know, it would be cool. I mean, he's used to play with Udo Dirk Schneider. Mm-hmm. He's also been with the Primal Fear. Oh, so nice. He's a great guy, but you know, I think it's, you know, the next record will have a slightly different lineup as well. So that's also one of the reasons why, well, Francesco will be there, the drummer from this record now, but there will be, you know, a few different people playing. There will be a couple of guests as well. So you know, next couple of videos for 2017 will be more in the band.
Before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
Well, all I can say is, you know, I really appreciate all the people, you know, of course, buying the records and following up on everything I do. And, you know, I really appreciate it. It's because of all you guys out there that I'm able to, you know, to do this. So, and it's it means a lot. I'm totally humble towards that, and I hope to see everybody somewhere, you know, down the road.
Well, perfect. Well, Jorn, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis Ragman Show here at therighttorock.com, And we want to tell all the fans to check out Heavy Rock Radio by Jorn, coming out on Frontiers in the U.S. on June 3rd. Man, and it's a killer record, dude.
Thanks, brother. Thanks.
Jorn, again, thank you so much for the time today. I look forward to the next time we get to chat again. And again, I can't thank you enough for all the time you've given me. It's been an honor to talk to you, man.
All right, mate. I'll hope to see you somewhere, yeah, and talk to you again, yeah.
Yeah, I'll look you up. I'll be the bald, fat guy that's banging his head.
well, something growing here as well. I got to do something now.
So. All right,
brother.
Take care, man. Enjoy the rest of your evening, buddy.
Yeah, you too. All right. Cheers, Alan.
Cheers. Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Nivel.
Joseph have lent us 13 to finish the show. So what you're listening to right now is 13 by Sonic X. So check them out and keep checking us out. And horns up.